You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
We'll meet our panel after we remind ourselves of some of the main news stories of the past few days.
We don't want to be here. We want to be inside looking after our patients. But unfortunately, the way nursing has gone at the moment, there is no new nurses coming on stream. A lot of our nurses have retired. There's nobody there to replace them.
We will now take this mandate forward and seek to obtain legally binding changes to withdrawal agreement that deal with concerns on the backstop.
The truth is that Theresa May has acted absolutely in bad faith in respect of an agreement that she brokered with the European institutions. It was an act of absolute bad faith in respect of the Good Friday Agreement.
Probably the worst video I saw. Don't know who this kid was, but he was very identifiable. You could see his face. He was playing PlayStation, had a controller in his hand. Just in the middle of him sitting there in the armchair, another teenager ran into the right-hand side of him, rained punch upon punch right in top of his face. The guy dropped to the floor and then they started raining and then kicks and knees to the head. It's knockout stuff, brain damage stuff.
And it's Ireland's day! Yes! 61 years of waiting! How sweet this moment is!
The sounds of Ireland's Grand Slam win in 2009 for Marcus Horan and his teammates. Before that, Councillor Cathal Crowe and the Snapchat Fight Club that he told us of this week. Prime Minister Theresa May and Sinn Féin's Mary Lou MacDonald on the week that was in Brexit, and a striking nurse outside the gates of Ennis General Hospital this past Wednesday, the first nationwide strike by the INMO in 20 years. I'm joined in studio to discuss some of these stories and more by Verena Tarpey of Rape Crisis Midwest, by Diarmaid McMahon, President of Ennis Chamber of Commerce and MD of Sherry Fitzgerald McMahon, and by Martin Waldron. He's from Cara Finn and is a businessman with Craftworks on Parnell Street here in Ennis. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us on the programme this morning. Verena, striking nurses, do they have your support?
I think nurses, of all the professions, I think they have an ability to strike emotion amongst us all. I think it's that caring type of profession. And the vast majority of us, as a result, we feel that connection with them, that they've cared for an awful lot of people. And I can see why they are gathering that momentum of support.
Sure, yeah.
As a result.
And just to be fair, the midwives as well, I think you could say exactly the same thing about them. For anybody who's been through a birth as a parent, you can see what a midwife has done for your family, and just as that link for the exact same reasons you just talked about.
Yeah, very much so. And part of the whole argument that is being raised is it's not just a question of pay for them. And when the public pay agreement was negotiated during the recession, recruitment, retention was a huge issue. And they did get that extra additional clause to go back to the negotiation table. And this is the path that they are taking at the moment. There is huge sentiment out there, huge sympathy for them. Some would be more cynical, of course, and look at the timing of these strikes and would adopt a more cynical approach, perhaps.
On which side of the fence are you on?
I have huge sympathy for the nurses and the conditions that they work in, but this just isn't about pay. This is about issues ongoing with hospitals as well, in relation to trolleys, in relation to emergency departments. There is a bigger picture in all of this as well.
Sure, but Martin, as we all know, there are a lot of issues, and we don't have to go far from here to see one of the highest profile examples of that at University Hospital Limerick, and the nurses' argument, which many would say is not without merit, is that if they were paid more, it would be easier to attract and to retain nursing staff, and the service as a whole would be better.
Yeah, okay. When you sent out your little vignette about what happens on the day.
Plan for the day.
Nurses strike, right? And I was going, okay, I'll do a bit of research as normal, right? So from a personal point of view, having dealt with the hospital system over a number of years, nurses are fantastic, right? System itself is, you can see the problems with the system, right? Spoke to a nurse last night who's a very regular customer inside in my little shop in Parnell Street, and what she told me was illuminating. She says, first of all, this is not a vocation, it's a profession. We are professionals. We train for 4 years, right? Most of that 4 years, you don't get paid. Then they changed the rules a couple of years ago. You get minimum wage for a certain period of time when you're training.
While you're on your placements.
But on your placements, you are a nurse or a nurse's aide inside in the hospital. She said, it's not about money. It's about respect. It's about our standing within the whole medical industry. That they describe the whole as a multidisciplinary team, right? Nurses sit at the very bottom of the totem pole on that. And it is, in certain cases, it's about wages. They said if you take the whole nursing profession as a whole and the average wage, it turns out, from the outside looking in, quite good, right? As you go through the profession, you become a nurse manager, your wages go up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now, the proportion of nurse managers to nurses in the system is rather high in this country. There's a whole series of other issues as well, but pay is not their main reason for striking. Now, they did take a major hit 10 years ago, and they felt the effects on that.
They did, of course.
Looking at the international area, they say, nurses are paid reasonably well here, right? Then when you start breaking it down, you start seeing that they're not paid as well as their contemporaries, right? 1,700 nurses qualify every year in this country. In the last 10 years, 19,400 nurses have left the country. So there's more nurses leaving than are qualifying. There's a whole series of reasons for that. The girl I spoke to yesterday, 70% of her class she graduated with 2.5 years ago, right, are now working somewhere else.
As in outside of Ireland?
Outside of Ireland. A number of them, they have to do a couple of years of training to get the extra qualifications. There's a huge incentive for nurses to work overseas, and it's about quality of life rather than just about pay.
The way that you're talking, that on the basis of the arguments that you've outlined this morning, that you feel the nurses' cause has merit, that they should be getting pay increase, should they be getting this 12% that they're seeking?
Maybe not 12%, but there is merit in their request or demand, right?
But as I understand it, you talked about them being at the bottom of the totem pole. The 12% is to bring them on an equal footing with the likes of physiotherapists and occupational therapists. I mean, I have the full detail exactly right, but it's to bring them higher up that totem pole. Less than 12% doesn't equal respect based on how you've just described it.
There's a wider picture happening here, right? I tried to speak to a second nurse this morning. She was supposed to finish her shift at 6 a.m, right? Mm. Her partner texted me at 9:30 saying, listen, she can't talk to you. She's still in the hospital. She's still working, right? That's 3.5 hours after her shift.
After
an overnight shift had changed, had stopped, right? They have huge dedication to their profession. And if you've been in the hospital system, you can see how hard they work, how dedicated they are. Now, a number of them have become institutionalised by the systems they work under and by the stupidity of certain things in the hospital system. Like, at one side, you have nurses looking for a pay demand here at the moment. We have a hospital in Dublin that's gone from 600 million to a projected 2 billion this morning, right? There's something fundamentally wrong with the health service. This is just a symptom of a major disease that's out there.
Jared McMahon. Does respect equal increased pay in your view?
It's part of it, and I just don't know if pay alone is going to solve this problem. And my heart and my head are saying two different things. And my heart is saying I have huge sympathy for nurses, but my head is saying from an economical perspective, it's going to be very tricky as to how the government navigate their way through this. And unfortunately, I think that's what's going to end up happening, is that they're going to attempt to navigate their way through it. And all of the problems that Martin has so well articulated there are not going to be addressed. If you strip it back without setting precedents for other people in the public sector, the economics of it is there is not enough nurses and they're leaving the country. So there's something fundamentally wrong. There's something rotten within that. And that you have that picture from a few weeks ago of Irish nurses at the Sydney Opera House in Sydney basically saying, look, we want to come home.
A couple of hundred of them. I think,
yeah, we want to come home, but we're not coming home to that. And see, the irony of it is if that money is invested in payroll, does that take away from the ability to actually invest in the system and try and fix the system? So it's a dreadful catch-22. I don't know how to solve it, but there is fundamental management problems wrong there. And the children's hospital is just... It's just so shocking to think that you have something that goes from 600 million to 2 billion, the most expensive hospital.
As somebody who works in property, and I know it's not the construction side of things, I don't know if you have much of an insight into anything of that. How does that happen?
I honestly don't. I just can't fathom
it. It's been 450 million in 4 months last year.
I would have thought a good QS would be able to... come up with a reasonable spec in terms of this is how many metres of cable we need, this is how much of this.
Seeing cabling was left out of completely of the original estimate.
You know, I just can't get my head around that. And, you know, there was some very savvy construction companies who have managed to, you know, whatever contract was done on day one, and not casting any aspersions on particular construction companies, but there seemed to be an open goal there. I mean, it just seems shocking. But the problem, if you look at that, because of the overspend there, it means that other projects are now going to be delayed and aren't going to happen. So there isn't an infinite amount of resources. But I think from a respect perspective, I think there has to be something done for the nurses, but I don't believe it by itself is going to solve their problems, and I don't believe it's going to bring those 200 nurses back from Sydney.
The Public Health Commission suggested as much as well.
Not only that, Gavin, you know, Martin very valid points about the role that nurses play in going above and beyond could also be raised in relation to guards, you know, in relation to
who
teachers.
Who got their pay deal, but I know where you're getting at.
So, you know, it is a very difficult issue. I can't reconcile myself either. But cynics would look at it in relation to the timing of it.
Would any of you give them 12% of the pay raise?
It's got to be negotiated. It's not just about money, it's about terms and conditions, and it's about how they're managed.
But ultimately, it's a check that has to be signed.
They went on strike for a whole myriad of reasons, and money is just part of it.
No, I understand that, and we've heard the argument.
As part of the negotiation, go and work through the other issues that they're really talking about and make them part of a reviewed, revised nursing contract.
What is that going to fix, as Jim talked about, the issues in our health service?
Gavin, I'll write a €300 million a year cheque, but I don't know. I don't know if it's going to clear.
That's a very valid point. It was a week, Jeremy, which saw some extraordinary videos emerge, highlighted by South East Clare councillor Cathal Crowe, of organised fights and downright assaults and attacks by teenagers on other teenagers, shared on social media. And it's given me rise to ask the question, if it was claimed separately in the Dáil this week, and I'll get onto it in a second, is there increased lawlessness amongst our children, or is the internet amplifying what's always been going on?
Well, I think the second point is valid, definitely, because like anything else, the internet and social media just provides this magnifying lens on everything and blows it out into a story when maybe before we wouldn't have heard anything of it. Is there increased lawlessness amongst children? Martin and I and Verena were speaking about it outside before we came in, and Martin made a very good point. You know, children will be children, kids will be kids, they'll do what they're going to do, and if the boundaries aren't set from them, you know, then, so who's responsible here? So the story is about children, but is it increased lack of control by adults should be the headline.
And I think that's a very valid point, but at the same time, going back to the internet side of things, I think there's an argument that can be made that it not only magnifies the problem, but that it also amplifies it or makes it worse in that there's a playing up to the camera.
That's a very
see that
yeah.
All over social media, and I don't think this is any exception.
Yeah, and you get absolutely. I think you're right, and you end up with this copycat and normalization of something that isn't right and isn't appropriate, and you know, and particularly at that age, the teenage age, where it's, you know, what do your peers think of you and how cool can you be? And it gives that window for that urge.
I mean, one of the biggest topics of conversation at school level, both at primary and secondary, is internet safety. And one of the things that differentiates us as adults when we were children is I don't think young people understand that what's put out there is permanent. And that's a big issue. That's what is put out there on those Snapchat groups remain forever. And I have no
even
doubt.
Even though they're deleted, they're saved off. And
yeah.
They,
yeah, yeah, I have no doubt in this world. I was a young person once. We got up to an awful lot of stuff. You know, we all got that bus to discos when we were young and stuff was going on. But here, there was only maybe two or three people who witnessed that, and that was it, it was over. Now there's a picture taken at the back of a bus that is shared, circulated, and it does intensify it. And with that, like Dermot said, that bravado that comes with it is attached to it.
You have to remind me of something, and I won't name names because it wouldn't be fair. But there was a quasi-reunion being organised of a group that I was once part of. And it was like marking an anniversary. And some photos went up of days of yore and people on nights out and that sort of... Now, nothing illegal, nothing close to what we're talking about this morning. But they all had to be taken down because they started getting messages from people who were then college students and are now, you know, professionals or parents or whatever it may be, saying... Yeah. That I don't want people to see that.
Yes, absolutely.
It's amazing.
And I would equally say, I have great faith in children. I have great faith in young people. I really think this story was exceptional and probably sensationalised a little bit. I believe...
Did you see the footage?
I didn't, no, I didn't.
I did. I saw awful things. And some of it was, you know, organised fights. And I'm not condoning it, but that's one level. But I saw random attacks on people. Yeah. I saw horrific amounts of punches and kicks and knees being landed on people's heads.
And clearly they were playing to an audience in doing
absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. And because the camera's out before it starts. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty dangerous. It's pretty shocking. Also, you know, young children are seeing an awful lot of, are being exposed to this at a much younger age than we ever were as teenagers. And internet safety has become one of the hottest topics along with bullying at primary and secondary level.
Do you, like Farina Martin-Walsh, have faith? Is this the exception as opposed to the norm?
When this came up first, right, there was a local politician who mentioned it. I was slightly sceptical in terms of politician, news story, election time, right? And then when you started looking into
general
it...
General election candidate.
Well, yeah, but then you started looking into it, right? And I was sitting down last night at 10 o'clock, right? In this world of Trump and Brexit, the main headline on the BBC News, and they spoke about it for 12 minutes, was about bullying on the internet and the influence of young teenagers by nefarious elements on the internet, about kids self-harming, about a child who committed suicide because she was urged and goaded to do
the
that.
The content that was fed to her by the algorithms of the websites was, in interviews, with some fueling her issues.
The problem here is lack of control on the internet of things and on social media. Now, I'm not a huge advocate of huge controls, but you set boundaries. Teenagers will push boundaries. Where there's no boundaries, they'll push them out to the very edge of the cliff. That's where the problem. We can see the issues with social media and the internet and how they can the pervasive influence of social media and the internet on modern life. Look at Cambridge Analytica, who have an office in Galway, by the way. I saw it driving down the Tume Road on Monday morning. They are the key influence reason why we've got that lovely gentleman in America, and Brexit happened because of the influence they had. They're a core part of it. There are other groups involved.
Well, and there's plenty of it, and there's investigations ongoing, and it may not necessarily happen, right?
But there has to be some control put on the internet, and it's power. It has huge positive power and huge negative power.
Apply that to this situation. Kids are uploading videos of them acting the maggot. How do you stop that? How do you police that?
Gavin, why were you allowed to see this video, right?
Because it was publicly accessible.
Why is it publicly accessible?
Well, actually, it's not now.
Yeah.
It's been taken down since.
Why is it publicly accessible?
Because it's been publicly shared on this platform by an individual.
Yeah. He was allowed to do it, right?
Yeah.
From the source point out, right? You can put up anything you want on the internet with no control. Like, send a 16-year-old into a shop and tell him to ask for cigarettes. Send a 16-year-old into a shop and tell him ask for alcohol. What's going to happen?
Well, theoretically, they'll be told, go away.
But there's no control on the internet whatsoever. You can put up what you want, when you want.
But how do you control it? Who controls it? Who polices the controlling of it?
Okay, I've got three kids who, they were formed, developed by the early internet. They're all working in IT technology now, right?
Yeah.
My daughter gave me her computer. We bought her a new computer as a present for her birthday there about 18 months ago, right? She gave me her computer, right? Mm. Taped across the camera was...
Yeah.
A little, a plaster, right? Mm. Why did she do that? Why does she know so much about the internet where she is saying, I'm going to take the control away from the camera that people cannot actually go in and access that? There is huge power
with modern technology. To do good and to do bad. If you put no controls on it, people are going to push those boundaries out completely.
I'll bring it to you when I'm reading it.
Yeah.
Am I right or am I wrong? I mean, how do you police that?
It's sad, actually, when I look at the younger generation now. The internet has led to a certain innocence being lost amongst young people, where they have access to a broad range of sites and access to knowledge that perhaps we didn't have as children. But I do take Martin's point that there is a certain element where we as adults as well have to take responsibility. It's not their fault. I have great faith in young people. I see them, I work with them all the time. They are a marvellous generation that are coming up, that are working an awful lot, that are volunteering an awful lot more in the community. And I'm sorry that this was published. It, from all accounts, it was quite disgusting and disgraceful. But it's permanent. And the one lesson that has come out of this for me is young people have to realise everything they publish is going to be permanent. Yeah. We can never erase it.
And I hope that the lessons in the schools are generally getting that message through. I'm not certain it is, though.
I'm not certain it is, and I think some of that control and some of that responsibility has to be placed on those that provide the platforms, the Facebooks, the Snapchats. They're making an awful lot of money, and
these
they have to take it.
Companies in the world.
Yeah, yeah, they've got to take responsibility. Yeah. And if they're clever enough to create algorithms that can put you into an echo chamber, that can reinforce and put you down a tunnel of information, because that's what you're clicking on, which it can be a very dark tunnel for some people in terms of what they're exposed to, and can get darker depending on what you click on. That's not good, and they have a responsibility. I'm sorry, that's it.
I remember seeing a stat, and I was just looking up, I can't find it exactly. I think there was an hour worth of content going up on YouTube, one website, an hour worth of content every second or something like that. But it's something incredible like that. It's 300 hours of video uploaded every minute, which is about the same. It's even more, actually, than I was saying. You can't police that. It's impossible.
Reduce the number of hours going up every second. I don't know. They've got to figure it out. They've got to figure it out, and they've got clever people to do it, and they'll have to figure it out.
Ask little Johnny and little Mary what they're doing on their phone. I think that might be a more,
yes.
a more effective policing method. Go on. Give the last word.
Phones are part of the issue, right? 12-year-old kids now have got...
8-year-old.
8-year-old kids, right? Again, I was talking with this to my wife last night.
Yep.
She was telling me about an incident of bullying happened to her, a family member, a young family member of hers, 12. Video was posted up on of her imitating a pop star, right?
Yeah.
And put up on a class WhatsApp group or whatever it was, right? Then she was bullied and ridiculed by everybody in the class. So, and then they had to go to the parents and talk to about it, and they were going, it's only an old video, right? Bullying happens in all aspects and facets of life, and has since caveman days.
You're particularly keen, Verena. I'm asking you this week because it's 3 months until campaigning really gets underway in the local and European elections, and in at least one referendum as well. So people may think that this isn't the time to talk about it, but before they go up on our polls, it is exactly the time to talk about it. And I know West Clare councillors were talking about it in recent days too. Do we need to ban election posters?
I'm going to get slated for this, but I love election posters.
What? Ah, you're not.
Yeah. I love the buzz of elections. I love the count, the tally. I love all that buzz.
You don't have to
and there's
posters.
Nothing... I just love the buzz of waking up in the morning and seeing all the posters. I'm sorry, I'm going to get slated for this. I really love it. What I love as well is after the election is over, I have this kind of OCD about checking which posters are down, and usually it's the winners that get taken down first.
Yes, yeah.
And it's the disappointed candidates that get taken down last. Plus they leave all the ties.
Yeah,
you know, those really irritating cable ties. But no, it's probably a good point to ban election posters. But I have to say, I love the buzz. The buzz of the posters going up.
Somebody who's clearly engaged in politics, do you think they have ever influenced you in any way?
No.
So why are we wasting money?
But for those who perhaps aren't as interested in politics and in government, and which I have a huge interest in how society is run, I would probably equip myself with information about who I want to vote for, about what person is offered. But for an awful lot of people who didn't even know most of the presidential candidates, they knew the ones with the posters up.
Yeah. But in this day and age, we've got TV, we've got that lovely internet thing we were all praising a few minutes ago.
Yeah, and unfortunately we'd like to get that internet younger generation engaged with the political process.
Of course.
And it's actually those that are voting who aren't maybe looking as much at that technology that are voting and have the bigger influence. So for them, those posters are important. I hate them. I don't think they should be there.
To make it harder to put up for sale signs. I'd say.
Well, exactly. I said it, and then I knew I was going to get caught. We've very strict rules in terms of where they go, how they go. And we don't stick them off.
No, but I don't mean it like that. You've got regulations, and you're following.
Absolutely.
Them, and you're doing the job, and there's a very good reason for it. I'm not going to know every house is for sale, but
It's just such an enormous waste in the first instance, and I think it's mad. You know what I mean? I don't think it's necessary, and I think good politicians should be out there, and the good politicians are out there, and they're the ones who are getting in front of people, and people know who's doing the work, and they don't need posters.
Pick up on Verena's point. If they did go away, if they were taken away, you'd miss them. You'd miss the buzz.
I didn't miss them today. They're not up today. I think I'll get over it in a few months' time.
But not only that, the tighter controls in you know, the regulations about having them taken down within a certain period of time has addressed an awful lot of that environmental issue too.
Mm. Well, the printing of them, the carry board, the, you know what I mean?
Be a referee. You've got the casting vote.
My initial reaction was ban them, ban them, ban them. The upcycler in me is going, more than, please. 50 election posters from the last local elections were collected by me from various candidates, went around, and we used them for a whole series of projects. We lined two chicken coops posters.
Recycling.
So, thinking about what chickens do at night time on poor old election posters, poor old politicians, it was a great end of life scenario.
I was just going to ask who's getting...
That's good news.
What we did is we actually fronted the faces away from the poor old chickens so they wouldn't get disturbed by them. But it created this beautiful white internal part of the chicken coops, right? Now, unfortunately, a mink came along a year later and got rid of all our chickens immediately, right? But we upcycled them. Mm. But it's huge, single-use plastic that like Dermot will do his carry boards, but he probably use them 10, 20 times over.
Yeah.
Because they're very durable. Yeah. Unless they fade.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the simple answer is ban them, right? If you want to, you can put up a single poster in every village or district declaring who all the candidates are for that district, right?
Mm-hmm. But in a given location or whatever it could be.
I mean, look at the last election campaigns, right? And the nasty messages are put out from both sides of the last campaign that went out. Every single Telegraph poll in the country had them on it. Did it change the result?
That's the question I think you can ask. It's now you've got to ask them, though. You know, and I what I don't understand is why they can't be banned, because it has to be a voluntary code, and that's been signed up to in some parts of Limerick. But let us know your thoughts on that one at home. And we talked a little bit about this one earlier, Jim, but before I let you go, tomorrow at, I think it's a 4:45 kickoff, I presume you'll be in front of a screen.
I will be in front of a screen. Unfortunately, I don't have a ticket.
Yes.
I do.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Yes, I'm a member of a rugby club for years. And
so am I.
Got my two tickets, but I will disclose to you, it is my first time going to the Aviva Stadium.
Oh, you'll love it. You will love it.
Oh,
and I'm bringing my son who plays rugby, and the excitement is building, I have to say.
Will you do me a favour? And you'll do this.
What? Go on, take a selfie and post it, is it?
No. Be in early. Right? Don't be one of those people who buys a ticket and then when the teams come out you can see 15,000 empty seats because they're still in the bars. You're not going to be that person.
Nope. No. We'll be there getting the burger and chips beforehand and soaking up the atmosphere.
The question I was asking you this morning, and I'll stay with yourself, Verena. The Irish rugby team, and I put this to Cullum earlier, is the Irish rugby team now the national sporting pastime? It's not a national sport, I'm not going that far, but above everything else, in sporting terms, is this what unites the country?
They're on a roll at the moment. I come from my mother's hurling background and my father's Gaelic from Mayo, and it was only when I went to college and university that suddenly I got a love for rugby living in the Munster region. It's absorbing us, people are very passionate, but we also like to stick with winners. And there is that mentality that when they're up, they're up. When they're down, they're down. And we love to support winning teams. But what I do admire about the Irish rugby system is how their central system has resulted in an awful lot of Irish players staying at home, playing for their country, and they give a certain level of priority to those athletes. I admire that, I have to say.
And they've been helped in different ways, but making the most of the system, absolutely. Is it the national sporting pastime?
It's become, from a television perspective, it's become very, very popular. And they've peppered the whole year with different competitions. You're kind of rolling from the Six Nations into the more competitive parts of the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup. The IRFU have done a very, very good job. I think that as Karina said, that the central control that they have over the whole system has worked really well for them. They grasped professionalism 20 years ago really well. Like this year, I think it's the first year we have all four provinces at the quarter final stage, be it Challenge Cup and Champions Cup. And actually, I think the really interesting part of it is it shows how competitive the Pro 14 is as well. Because like the English and the French teams are not doing well in the Champions Cup and at that level, and the Pro 14's team and the standard they're playing at. I think the Irish provinces have raised that bar dramatically within the Pro 14 to the benefit of Scotland and Wales and Italy.
And Verena's right, we follow success.
Absolutely.
And we take out the toy show, the top two most watched programmes last year, Martin, were rugby matches in Ireland. Mm-hmm. Ireland against England, Ireland against New Zealand, in that order. More the World Cup, more than any All-Ireland final.
Okay, look, I remember my dad. In the late 70s, early 80s, right? He worked very hard. He was a supermarket owner. There was 5 weekends of the year. Mm. Saturday, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, right? He would come upstairs from the shop, white coat on, sit down in front of the television, and he would watch whatever rugby match was on RTE that day.
Five Nations. Right?
And that was now he was a passionate GAA guy. He played for Mayo in the '50s. He was GAA through and through, right? But he loved his rugby. And it's no different now. But I was thinking about this last night, and there was my key memory of a kid is that hour and a half, no matter what happened in the rest of the world, he was going to watch the match. Mm. So it's always been a huge popular part of Irish culture.
Well, wasn't that massive in the '90s?
Ireland weren't that great in the 90s. They weren't that great in the 70s and 80s either, right? But
we had flashes in the 80s, but look, yeah, I know what you're saying.
It has come on. Munster are the best supported club team in Europe by a long way, even considering the capacity of Thomond Park is only 26,000, right? Mm. There's a huge... The Irish team is doing very well, but Dermot said and Vera said in terms of the consolidation of resources and keeping the players in the country has worked...
Fantastic.
Very. It's a winning team at the moment. Hopefully they'll do well at the World Cup, but it's always been part of it. As a participative sport, it doesn't even come in the top echelon, and it's still so.
Soccer was still more than
soccer, but if you talk about, I think what you, Dermot, you were swimming this morning or yesterday morning. Right?
Yeah.
Swimming is the biggest participative sport in this country, right?
Well, walking would be.
But
just saying.
Yeah. But I was looking at a list of the activities that most people partake in the country.
You really did your research, Martin.
But I've learned over the last period of time, you're better off to actually go and look at things. Don't wing it too much, you know.
Can I I'm doing rugby underage coaching tomorrow between 2:30 and 3:30 before the match.
That'll finish on time.
It'll finish on time. But I played rugby at an underage level. I've been involved in rugby all my life. I love it, but last summer after the hurling championship, I actually found it really difficult for about a month to watch rugby. I just found
it was so slower.
It was so slow, and they kept stopping and starting. And after the hurling last summer, it was just such a fantastic spectacle. And I think actually the winner last summer was hurling and rugby. They kind of match each other in terms of season.
Limerick,
and I
think Dermot. Limerick.
But I think football and Gaelic football. I think it's just needs to work on itself. It needs to change itself. It needs to reinvent itself.
It's tough as a neutral.
It's tough as a neutral.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Will we win tomorrow? You going to be happy at full time?
You'll be happy
smile,
anyway with the ticket.
We're happy now anyway. Well, I wish you all the best with it. Safe travel and enjoy the game.
You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 midday.